Money FM 89.3, best of workday afternoon. Hard Truths from GE 2020 with Mr. K. Shanmugam, Minister for Home Affairs and Minister for Law, on Workday Afternoon with Clarissa Montero, only on Money FM 89.3.
You're on Money FM 89.3. I'm Clarissa Montero for the Workday Afternoon. Singaporeans went to the polls on July 10th. In the last 2 weeks, there has been much discussion and assessment of GE 2020's results. Today, we are joined in the studio by Mr. K. Shanmugam, Minister for Home Affairs and Minister for Law, to look at some of the hard truths from GE 2020. Minister, good afternoon and welcome back to Money FM 89.3.
Afternoon and thank you.
Right into it, GE 2020, what was the message voters are sending?
Deep economic pain out there. People are hurting. COVID has been bad in health terms, but also in economic terms. I've said it in Parliament, you know, it's devastation of the economic climate all around the world and in Singapore. SMEs are suffering. People are uncertain of their jobs. I think that's a primary message. That's government's 100 billion has sort of helped slow down the impact, but people can still feel, businesses in particular, are hurting very badly. And that is continuing and deepening. And we've got to deal with that. So first point is a very clear message on how people are hurting. Second, I think also the need for diversity. I mean, a desire for diversity in Parliament. I would take away these two messages.
So people want to have an alternate voice just for balance, you think?
They want alternate voice, yes.
All right. Minister Lawrence Wong speaking to reporters at the PAP's Bedok headquarters during a press conference that was also live-streamed to party activists on July 18th, noted that the swing against the PAP was not concentrated solely among the young, which was an early assumption by some. He further shared that the more likely swing, based on preliminary review, came from the sandwiched middle-class voters who, as you already pointed out, might be faced with economic hardship and uncertainty due to COVID-19. This middle-class voter is part of the PAP's core.
Yeah.
What is your read and how will it be addressed?
I said earlier, the primary message is deep economic pain. Right? People are hurting. And the task of every government, whether in Singapore or elsewhere, is to solve issues, deal with the economic issues. In a sense, because the entire world is suffering, we are also part of that same boat. But we have to continue to try and do what we can on that front. So that's, to me, the primary takeaway.
There are going to be immediate requirements and there's also going to be longer-term requirements in the government's response for those who are hurting.
Yes.
COVID's going to have a very long tail.
It may do. I would say in the immediate, just like, you know, there's been a substantial amount of cash put up, we'll have to see what else is necessary to deal with the pain that's continuing.
Mm-hmm.
When you say middle class or people, say, between 40 and 60, I would also say SMEs, small businesses, particularly in the construction sector, related sectors, they are all hurting very badly. Lots of expenses. Government is helping through JSS. Government is helping through other ways. For example, waiving the foreign worker levies, giving rebates. But, you know, in the absence of business, new business, these are blood transfusions, but they're not by themselves enough. You need to survive, and people are feeling the pain quite a bit. So that's the immediate term. We've got to try and make sure that as many of our firms, the businesses get through, and that is primarily to save Singaporean jobs. Even if we can't save every job, we've got to try and save every Singaporean. Try and train them, give them other options, tide through this period. And it may have a long tail. That's in the short and medium term. We've got to help our people. We cannot by ourselves wave a magic wand and create economic growth in the context of a global deep recession. But we can tide through and help our people. In the longer term, this COVID would accelerate the trends that were already there before COVID worldwide. Economic trends. To some extent, you may see a slight reversal on globalization because people may say strategic items need to be produced locally rather than rely on a supply chain from outside. So you would see dislocations. It may impact us because we are one of the largest trading nations in the world. And we have to position ourselves for this new environment and make sure that our people are ready, both in terms of our businesses and our workers' abilities. So very substantial challenges in the medium to longer term.
This slowing down of globalization, and I think countries around us as well are looking more inward,
yes.
Domestic
yes.
economies rather than that globalization.
Right.
Does that provide us with a unique challenge?
It provides us with a challenge amongst many challenges. For example, don't forget the strategic challenges coming from differences of viewpoints between the big countries, US and China, for example. That presents a set of challenges. There are many other challenges. Economically, the sort of reversal of, I don't think globalization can be completely reversed, but some reversal or some block on continued globalization will bring about its own challenges because we are an important logistics node, air hub, a place where there's a lot of exchange of goods, trade, and obviously it will impact us. And so we'll have to position ourselves too.
Okay, which means it sounds like digitalization needs to be accelerated at every level for us.
Digitalization has got to be accelerated. That's a given. We've got to do it. We've got to remake our economy on that.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition, that alone is not going to be enough. We are only relevant if we are relevant to the new environment, new economic environment,
right.
New strategic environment, new economic environment. How does this place, 760 square kilometers of a small island in the southern tip of Asia, survive? So you've got to be relevant.
So there is going to be some pain for our local Singaporeans, especially mid-career Singaporeans, in the short term as they reskill and upskill.
If you look at the employment sector in the main, the layoffs will hit the foreign workforce first,
mm-hmm.
by and large.
Sure.
So that's a buffer, as has happened in previous recessions too. But inevitably, because the economy has suffered so much, it will affect Singaporeans too. Layoffs will be there. You've seen them start,
mm-hmm.
have started for some time in numbers, and that's likely to continue. But meanwhile, government is ramping up its own programs, working with the private sector to try and create jobs, internships, take people on and train them for a couple of years, pay them some money, and then in 2 years, the young people can go out and get other jobs. And for mid-career professionals, how can we help them position themselves for new jobs? It's a tough task and it's a tough ask.
Okay. It is a tough ask of the government.
It's a tough ask of the people too.
Yes, it is a tough ask of the people as well. Coming back to the people and specifically our younger, do you think we are moving towards more liberalizing and maybe a more popular style of governing in the near future?
That's difficult to tell.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the end, you have to take your population as you find it. And the politics, the way politics is played out, will have to, largely be positioned by the needs of the people.
Right.
And what the people want is how most governments will try and structure themselves. So it's a bit difficult for me to say at this point.
Okay. did you see from preliminary review, did you see a call for that from our younger voters, our first-time voters?
I don't think if you went to the younger voters and asked, do you want a populist government? I don't think they're going to say, I want a populist government. So when I said, you know, how our politics is structured, mm-hmm. depends on the people. That depends on, you know, how the moods change and how and what people want, right? Which is not easy to predict at this point in time.
Okay.
But if you're talking specifically about the younger voters, I think they were, in my view, no different from younger voters of previous generations. They want fairness. They want justice. They want to feel that they are part of a system where people are able to express themselves. And they want good governance, and they want the party in government to produce results. And, you know, it's not an unfair expectation.
Absolutely. We are speaking with Mr. K. Shanmugam, Minister for Home Affairs and Minister for Law. We'll come back with more questions for you specifically.
Hard Truths from GE 2020 with Mr. K. Shanmugam, Minister for Home Affairs and Minister for Law, only on Money FM 89.3.
You're on Money FM 89.3. We are back with more from Minister K. Shanmugam. I want to look directly at you and your results in GE 2020. You saw a percentage drop too. What does that mean for you and Nisunen, and what is your reaction specifically for Nisun moving forward?
We are analyzing the results in Nisun.
Mm-hmm.
I actually take some heart from the results,
mm-hmm.
because we've put in a lot of effort over the years, and in the last 5 years, people have seen what we have done on the ground, and we have communicated that quite effectively too. I mean, we have been doing work, and you know, Nisun has transformed quite tremendously over the years, not just the last 5 years. But in the last 5 years, we have said to them what we did, and they could see all of that. And that's widespread acceptance. Even the opposition started off the campaign and right through by conceding that Nisun has a lot of hardware, it has seen a lot of development. You know, they always conceded that. And people acknowledged that. So in the last two elections, before GE 2020, we were always slightly below the national percentage.
Mm-hmm.
In this election, we were at maybe marginally above the national percentage. So to me, that's a reflection of the efforts on the ground that people have observed, that we actually moved up. And our swing is less than, for example, the national percentage. So I take some heart. It shows that if you do a lot of work on the ground, it makes a difference. Therefore, we will redouble our efforts to push that up even further.
All right. I can tell you this, though. When I was very young, I lived in that area.
Right.
And it was a...
You're still very young. Okay.
Oh, I'm bringing this lighting with me everywhere I go. But when I lived there, it was an area where people were very vocal about their opposition if they were opposed to policy, government policies and what have you.
Yes.
For one nanosecond, I lived in an opposition area within that area as well.
Right.
And so I can say that you're absolutely right, because things have changed and the sentiment has changed.
Sentiment has changed.
Yeah, the sentiment has definitely... Yeah, I still have family.
The long years of work on the ground,
yep.
by the different MPs. And we have had the benefit of many good MPs,
mm-hmm.
I think, has left its impact on people.
All right, let's talk about this last hustings. When you do your walkabouts, do residents invite you to sit down and join them for kopi?
Many residents do, not just now, but, you know, even during the normal pre-election period,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the 5 years, people do. Often, I'm unable to. Sometimes I sit down with them and have a drink.
Sometimes you do?
Sometimes I do.
So when you do, what do they want to talk to you about?
Usually we are, you know, I'll ask them where they're from, mm-hmm. you know, how long have they been in Nisun, if they're from Nisun. Sometimes there are people who are coming to visit their parents. Sometimes they are residents, young people who have grown up all their lives in Nisun and now starting a family. interesting to find out where they're working, what their lifestyles are, and, you know, what are the challenges are.
So what kind of questions do they ask you?
Usually policy-related questions or something that troubles them or something that is a specific issue. Yeah.
Does that help you?
Does that help me? Yes, because the one of the important ways in which you keep grounded is by having that direct contact with people and knowing what are the issues they face, what are their thoughts, even if there are no issues, what are their feelings. It's important.
Because it helps.
Yeah,
you
even when I don't sit down with them, mm-hmm. when I walk through, even if I don't sit down and have a coffee, I ask these questions. And they approach me, and then there's the MPS, and there are other occasions. So that helps you be very grounded.
All right. I don't live in your constituency, but if I invited you for kopi, would you say yes or no?
Of course, yes.
I'm so not shy. Help us understand exactly how hard is it mentally, emotionally, as a candidate going through the whole election process?
You will have to ask a first-term MP. I think they will have the...
Oh, you say you're an old hat.
Best impressions, you know, because they haven't had experience before. Mm-hmm. This is the eighth time I've gone through. It's slightly different. And anyway, I approach these things with a slightly different mindset.
I've looked at your social media. I've looked at I look at your social media a lot because I do have family who still lives in that constituency. So I'm personally interested in what you're doing for that community.
Right.
And I have to say, you do take a lot of time with people who live in your constituency. But surely there is a mental cost to you or an emotional cost to you, especially on a polling day when the results start to come in. That's got to be exciting.
Well, I try to take life with a certain equanimity. I don't always succeed, mm-hmm. but, I recommend to people Kipling's poem, If. You take everything with a certain philosophical approach. And then you will not let external events influence your state of mind.
That is actually something I only now start to understand as I get older. That attitude. Mm-hmm. I would probably have not gotten it or even trusted that was the truth when I was 12.
Right.
Because you can't, you have
you
no...
Can't, you yeah. can't. You've got to go through it and then slowly you evolve into... with a different mindset.
Right.
I mentioned If because that's easier mm-hmm. for people to understand. But yep. there are many other ways in which you find the same thought process in many other teachings.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so you're saying balance as you go along, as you get
balance
older.
Balance and, take everything in context mm-hmm. and do your best and do your duty and don't worry about the results.
All right. Okay. So do
it's
your
easier
best.
Said, easier
said than done.
Done.
Yeah. Yes. Now this one is interesting for me. You have been. This is your eighth election cycle. You are entering your 33rd year in Parliament.
Exactly.
How much longer can you go?
You should talk to my Prime Minister.
How much
it's
longer do you
it's
want
a,
to
it's
go?
It's a conversation I've been having with him for the last 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And how much longer do you want to go? There's got to be some desire.
I wish I can tell you.
Oh, dear.
It's not a question of how much longer I want to go, mm-hmm. but rather how much longer I have to go.
All right. Yeah. Okay. And in that vein, Singapore has had great ministers of law. Since independence, E.W. Barker, Professor S. Jayakumar, and you. Perhaps it is not top of reference for many Singaporeans, but this succession is also very important to us. Is someone in training for this future role right now?
First, leaving aside false modesty, I wouldn't mention my name along with in the same breath as Mr. Barker and Prof. Jaya. Right? Okay. As to successor, there are three lawyers in cabinet. Desmond Lee, Edwin Tong and Indrani Raja. Indrani and Edwin were from private practice. They are senior counsel. Desmond has been in the service all along before he went into politics. And all three have been at MinLaw. So the Prime Minister has much choices, you know, when he wants to.
You're being coy.
The Prime Minister has much choice when he wants to appoint a new Minister for Law.
All right. And you are still being coy. So that was a lawyerly prevarication, I would
have
to say.
It wasn't a prevarication. It was a factually accurate answer.
All right. We come back with more questions for Mr. K. Shanmugam, Minister for Home Affairs and Minister for Law, in a special post-GE 2020 conversation, only on Money FM 89.3. We turn to the future.
Hard Truths from GE 2020 with Mr. K. Shanmugam, Minister for Home Affairs and Minister for Law, only on Money FM 89.3.
Here on Money FM 89.3, I'm Clarissa Montero, sitting with Mr. K. Shanmugam, Minister for Home Affairs and Minister for Law, in a special post-GE 2020 conversation. We now turn to the future. In GE 2020, all eyes had been on 4G. How did they perform?
They are coming together. Mm-hmm. They are learning how to work together. This is really the first elections where they sort of took more charge and working styles, approaches. So they are trying to work as a team. You know, their task is no different from what the 2G and 3G had to go through as well.
Do you think they have challenges that maybe 2G and 3G didn't have to face?
In some ways, yes, but in other ways, no. Let me tell you what I think are the similarities. Mm-hmm. Just take 2G. 2G had to forge its own way in the shadows of Mr. Lee Kuan Yew, Dr. Goh Keng Swee, you know, the towering giants.
Yes, they were.
Right, and the other ministers, Mr. Barker and so on. 4G has to forge its way while you have an extremely formidable and popular prime minister and two senior ministers who have very large footprints and some other 3G ministers. So they now have to carve out their own way and present themselves to Singaporeans and win the confidence. So their challenges are similar to that of the 2G, but different as well because the population and the demands of the population, demands as in expectations of the population, each generation is different. So the current generation is different yet compared with previous generations. So they've got to also develop a style that is more suitable for this new generation of expectations.
Okay, you come from a previous generation of ministers.
I'm somewhere in between, yeah, in age.
Okay. Yeah. How has social media been a challenge for you? Has that been something that you've embraced? Do you understand it? Do you use it? Do you find it inconvenient? Because this moving forward is how our 4G is going to have to communicate even more.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. I think without philosophizing too much about it, it is there. Mm-hmm. You better learn to deal with it.
Okay.
It's as simple as that. Yeah.
Do you enjoy it, though?
It can be enjoyable if you know how to deal with it. I think so.
Okay. The reason I asked about social media is from this GE 2020, it was unprecedented in so many ways, but in one that I don't remember social media playing such a big part with the electorate speaking to each other about different things, different candidates. And at that point, I wonder, would it be honestly fair to say that some of the PAP candidates can be perceived as boring, perhaps capable, but maybe don't appeal in the same way as some of the opposition candidates? Oh, I don't like that face. You look like you're going to scold me for that.
For that? No. Certainly what you have said has been said to me by others. Mm-hmm. I would say it's a difference between perception and reality.
Okay.
If you look at the PAP candidates, you know, in the 8 elections that I've been, mm-hmm. this is probably the best slate of young candidates, fresh, full of energy, full of ideas. They want to do things. Just take the women candidates, okay? The first general. You take Carrie Tan from my GRC. She came from a very humble family background. Father was a taxi driver, went to RGS, went to university, took on a corporate job, gave it up to start an NGO, which helped underprivileged women. You look at Rachel in West Coast, also doing not-for-profit work, social sector work, NGO. Many different women have come forward. You know, they want to make a change. You look at the men, again, if I can use an example from my own GRC, Derek.
Mm-hmm.
He, as he says, a kid from Balam Road, you know, 6 of them in a 3-room HDB flat running around in shorts and singlets. Grew up, did well enough, went to university, put himself through with tuition, and gave tuition to put himself through and pay his fees. Ended up working in the world's best financial centers, London, New York, Paris, and so on, and came back, took charge of POSB, revamped it, and is now one of the senior officers in DBS. This is a typical Singapore success story.
Sure.
It's an excellent story. It tells you of social mobility. It tells you of the world of possibilities for all our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And the new candidates from the PAP symbolize that. It may be that because there are so many of them, that not all of it comes through. And because the PAP has been in power forever,
mm-hmm.
as in people's living memories,
mm-hmm.
its candidates obviously don't attract as much attention.
Right.
But I think if people looked at them, they will see that passionate young men and women who want to create a better Singapore.
Okay, let's talk about these passionate young men and women. Perhaps the way they are presented to us needs to be relooked, because I didn't know some of these stories.
Yes.
And I'm in the media.
Right.
What more the average voter?
Well, something for the PAP HQ to think about, and how to present our candidates in a way where people understand that they are people with passion and energy, and that, you know, by looking at what they've done and what their vision is, I think we can present them better.
Which leads me very beautifully to my next question. Is there some kind of thinking or sensing within the PAP, within the government, that perhaps you have to relook the way you communicate with us?
Communication of complex policies is a challenge not just in Singapore.
Mm-hmm. No,
it's all over the world. Policies need to be thought through carefully. And they cannot be communicated in sound bites. And we try and communicate them. But I have found it a challenge to get the details of any policy understood. And I don't blame the communicator, nor do I blame the population. It's just the way it is. People have busy lives. There is a limited attention span for things which are not directly relevant for their day-to-day lives. That's the way it is. We have to keep trying harder and harder to get the key policies communicated across. And there are some people who break through that barrier,
mm-hmm.
and are able to communicate, you know. And the rest of us can only try.
Okay. I think that moving forward, being a communicator as a professional, you are absolutely right. Difficult, complex ideas and policies are hard to break down into
and the trade-offs.
Sidebars and sound bites. But you need to try.
We need to try.
Yeah.
Right.
You do need
we
to try.
We need to try.
Now, is it time to relook and perhaps even rethink the way new PAP candidates are selected?
I spent some time with you explaining what sort
yes.
of candidates they were. And in my view, they are very high quality. They symbolize the movement and the progress that's possible in Singapore.
So will we see more of them?
I hope so. I hope so, because they are a passionate lot.
And this passionate lot has to do well for that to be the case. Are they sort of an experiment then?
I won't say an experiment. Mm-hmm. I mean, they want to do good. Does that mean that all of them will be able to do good? I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they will have to learn the ropes. They will have to help on the ground. Many of them come with that kind of experience on, you know, working with in the ground, working with NGOs. So I am very hopeful.
Okay. We'll leave that. We're very hopeful. I think Singaporeans are very hopeful as well. We'd like to see people we can understand, that we can relate to.
Yes.
I would love to see some of them do really, really well. So we can have more
of
them.
We will all like to see that.
Now, many polls and surveys have been done focused on Gen Zs. I'm going to cite one. Samsung's recent poll on Gen Zs revealed 85% are optimistic that our nation can solve the societal challenges it faces. I find this intriguing when you put it alongside the fact that, you know, you brought up your new GRC members, Kerry Tan. She's not a traditional pick. Some of the others that you mentioned as well. I'm wondering, what are you going to be looking for in GE 2025, perhaps? Is it more along these lines? Are you looking for people who have more experience in the social sector? Are you looking for people who might be drawn more, less from military and more from real life, three-room HDB flats, etc.?
I would say you choose people who you think can best serve the residents. You don't disadvantage them because they come from the military.
Mm-hmm.
You don't put them aside because they come from the civil service.
Mm-hmm.
But you look to see where you can find the talent and the passion and the energy. You look at some other countries where there is full national service, like Israel. Many of their politicians are drawn from the military or with military background. Not all, but, you know, a fair number.
Mm-hmm.
They are not doing that badly. I mean, their politics is slightly different from ours. But the fact that military men are in politics doesn't disadvantage the country. And in case people have forgotten, Prime Minister and SMTO were military men,
mm-hmm.
right? So, but that's not to say that then everyone in politics, everyone in senior positions in politics should be from military. I'm just saying that...
You're from the private sector.
I'm from the private sector. So you need a mix of skills.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's always useful. But I would also not start with preconceived ideas that military is bad or military is good, civil service is bad or civil service is good. I think the idea is you look to the individual. What are their capabilities? The fact that a person comes from, say, civil service and does exceptionally well doesn't mean that everyone else who comes from the civil service will do exceptionally well.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, traditionally, talent has gone into the civil service, into the military, and therefore, naturally, the talent pools in those areas were high. But now the private sector has a substantial talent pool too. And I think you look for people of quality across different sectors.
So it actually sounds like the question that I asked earlier, do you think you need to relook and perhaps rethink the selection? It sounds like you actually the party already has.
And the essentials you look for are the same. The person, does he have energy? Does he have the heart to serve? Is he willing? Is he capable?
Mm-hmm.
And those questions are fundamental and they don't change. Where you find them, as society changes, you also have got to change the way you look for people. Because the people you bring in have got to fit the needs of a changing population.
All right. Now, before I let you go, this is probably, for many Singaporeans, my children included, a big question. What does the outcome mean to the 4G succession? Is it still on track?
The 4G succession, as I said earlier, it's something that, you know, they have to forge. As we have indicated, work in progress,
mm-hmm.
started some time ago. And they have to both get the confidence of the population and a changing electorate, and at the same time, carve out their own roles and work with each other in a changing international context with many new challenges. And in that sense, the challenges they face are no different when the 2G was emerging from the shadows of the 1G, which was a towering generation, and when the 3G was emerging from the shadows of the 2G. It's in the Singapore style, you know, each generation has got, it emerges and is helped by the previous generation. And that's a work in progress.
It's interesting because it's made me want to ask this question. I've been asking you for the last half an hour, what do you think of Singaporeans and the voters and all that? Let me ask you this last question. What would you like Singaporeans to do for you? You know, we talk about what we want the government to do. What would the government like Singaporeans to do? Would you like us to get behind you to go through COVID-19 together, united?
This is how I would put it. The government works for the people.
Mm-hmm.
People have to get behind each other to help each other.
Right.
And government, now that elections are over, we have to work in partnership with the people. It's not people doing anything for us.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, we are all serving society. We are elected to serve society, serve people, and we hope to work in partnership with people.
So you're saying it's not different sides. We're all on the same side.
Yes.
It's Team Singapore.
Yes.
All right. And on that note, we've been speaking with Mr. K. Shanmugam, Minister for Home Affairs and Minister for Law, in a look at hard truths from GE 2020. Shan, thank you for taking the time to talk to me today.
Thank you very much.
You are on Money FM 89.3. I'm Clarissa Montero. This is Singapore's most influential radio station.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.